You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to 90 Day Soulmate with Lisette
and Jim.
Today on 90 Day Soulmate, how Disney films impact our relationship beliefs. Were we programmed as to how to believe a relationship is by the movies we saw as children? Maybe the concept of prince and princess has changed how we think about relationships. Discover with us our analysis of the relationships we found in many of the Disney movies we saw as children.
Hello.
Hi. Welcome to 90 Day Soulmate with Lisette.
And Jim.
That's it?
Oh, Jimmy.
Oh, we had a good week this week. We went on a little bit of a trip. We spent some time in...
Greenville.
Yeah. Greenville, South Carolina. I got a little bit of redness on me, if you see. Mm-hmm. Some of the things that we want to talk about this week, we want to talk about... what we grew up with, our generation, maybe some ahead of us and some behind us as well, with children's stories or stories that we saw in the movies, a lot of them being Disney productions.
Mm-hmm. Cartoons.
The
romantic story.
So it's basically the programming that we received as children into what romantic relationships... and what things should be, how people should relate to each other, how people should relate to different family members, maybe broken families.
And maybe believe this is love.
And they can believe that the broken family is love. They can believe that what they see as a child in these stories is what love is about. How do you find your soulmate forever? Mm-hmm. And these stories are kind of interesting.
Like the prince.
The prince.
Yeah.
Everyone's rescued by a prince. So we're going to talk about three things today. We're going to talk about Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. Actually, it's pronounced dwarfs here. So I don't know if that's also correct for plural. Dwarves or dwarfs. Because it's wolf and wolves. So is it dwarfs? I don't know. Anyway, that's one. So, Snow White. The second one.
Cinderella.
Cinderella. That's a difficult one for Lisette because double L.
And in Spanish is Cenicienta. Okay.
And I can't pronounce that, so we're even. But we're going to talk about that story, Cinderella. Everyone's really familiar with it and how that story is read and seen and projected. It becomes a model for us that's in the back of our head somewhere that we think, oh, that's a relationship. That's how we seek out love. And then lastly, we're going to talk about Beauty and the Beast, a story of how beauty conquers beast.
Okay.
Or something like that. So we're going to talk about all those. But we're going to first start off with Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. Mm-hmm. And the storyline goes that Snow White is this young and up-and-coming princess who is beautiful and is living in the castle with her wicked stepmother, which seems to be a theme in a lot of these stories, that there's this wicked stepmother.
So why most of these princes have a stepmother? That is my question.
Why does the princess...
yeah.
Have the stepmother.
You know, have the own mother.
Right. The mother sometimes disappears. No.
So not become prince because you lose your mama. This is the
message. Don't be a princess because you'll lose your mother. So first it starts off with something very stressful, right? So there is no mother. Typically the father who is kind and generous and loving, because all fathers are, right,
mm-hmm.
to their princesses. He loses his wife.
Accidentally.
We don't want to go into the old days where there were things beyond accidents, right?
Investigation.
George, what was it? King George and his eight wives? Anyway, so going back to this is that the stepmother in this story, wicked stepmother, wants to be the most beautiful woman in the whole land. And so she has this magic mirror on the wall, which reveals to her that she is no longer the most beautiful of all.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, in this story, it talks about how people come to the door, meet the princess, and suddenly they just are in love with the princess. And this makes the wicked stepmother just irate. But going back to the stepmother is
mm-hmm.
that if you look at these stories and you go, okay, so father remarries and it's a wicked stepmother. Children may see that when their father remarries, that it's obvious that the new woman is a wicked stepmother, because in many of these stories, that's what happens.
Yeah, yeah. So you see some kind of program in the children to say, I don't like my stepmother. I cannot follow. I cannot be good child with my stepmother, maybe with my mother.
So we talk about being biased or mm-hmm. being preconditioned
mm-hmm.
to look at something in a certain way. And if children are preconditioned to look at their stepmother as being evil and wicked,
yeah,
then they will look for behavior. And if the behavior may be neither good nor bad, they may look at it as being bad. So people will read into a situation what they want based upon their biases, their prejudging of people. And so is this a story that has now set us up for
many years
in the future,
many generations also? Yeah.
So, and the other thing I wanted to say is that it is difficult, right, for a new mother, a mother who marries, not a mother, but a woman who marries a man who has children already, mm-hmm. even in a divorce, right? So there's a lot more divorces going on. In these stories, it's typically death. In our life, though, 50% of people or 50% of marriages are ending in divorce, so there's lots of divorcees yeah. out there, that there's a lot of women who are stepping in, also men, but women stepping into the role of mother, even on a temporary basis, with children that have no biological connection. You know, so you may not be happy with your own mother
mm-hmm.
because she's being tough to you, but you know she's your mother. You know there's this biological connection. And I'll say for the majority of people, there's a understanding that, yes, she's tough on me, but she still loves me. Whereas the stepmother steps in and is a tough stepmother, there is no biological connection. There is no overarching, stronger connection than this, whatever the incident that's going on right now. Oh, this is it. There's nothing, there's no backstory. There's no, I didn't grow up with this person. They didn't raise me. They didn't nurse me. So there's not anything that mellows or moderates the situation with a step-parent. There's no connection that has gone on for years in front of that incident. It may just be you've just met the person, or it's a year later, and then there's that. So these stories that set us up for not getting along with stepmother, could be a step-parent,
mm-hmm.
program us for that. There's a lot more with this, such as what happens to Snow White.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the interesting thing about this is the characters in Snow White. Snow White being they take a guess that she's a 15 to 17 year old girl. Which, first of all, you know, when these stories were written, when they were filmed by Disney or by somebody who made them into cartoons because they've been made over and over and over. They're in books. The idea of Snow White being 15 to 17, today you'd be like, wait a minute, she's finding a guy and going off to get married at 15 to 17. Okay.
It's in another country.
Yeah. But we go back to why 15 to 17 and what is the character? Snow White is possibly drawn by the Disney cartoon people in the 1937, I believe that's when it was, 1937 cartoon, whatever you call that, illustrative...
Cartoon.
Mm-hmm. Their production, Disney's production. She is drawn after, to look like, modeled after, the average 15 to 17-year-old girl at the time. And there are many, many reasons for this. One is, so people watching the movie will see her as the average 15 to 17-year-old girl. So she's not, like, gorgeous. She's average. She's doesn't have any amazing traits. She's spoken about as being the most beautiful, but she's drawn as the average 15 to 17-year-old girl. This enables people who are watching the movie to relate to her. So you think of a younger child seeing this relatively attractive 15 to 17-year-old girl and going, that's me, or that's going to be me. They see themselves in that position.
And this is part of the creation.
It's the creation, but you would, for doing a film, and this is this is true with all films, is you want characters that represent people, so people can relate to the characters.
Yeah.
So they have more of an emotional connection.
Yeah.
And it impacts them more. So there's a character here, Snow White, who is drawn to be and represent the average 15 to 17-year-old girl who people see themselves as or somebody they would know or recognize. So there's a very close tie. Now, that person goes through all the scenarios. You know, she's kicked out of the castle where her evil stepmother is and and I'm going to probably get this story a little bit wrong, but the stepmother sends her off into the woods with a huntsman, one of her guard, for the guard to kill her. And this thing blew my mind. But she's so nice and so attractive
and the guy
that he doesn't kill her. Instead, he sends her off into the forest, and somehow she meets up with... the seven dwarves.
Seven guys.
Wow,
auction.
So now seven guys, but they're seven... Innocent guys. and they're kind of comical, right? So the guys that she meets, and what's interesting, everything's interesting, but what I see about this is here's seven guys with seven different types of traits, and we're gonna talk about them too, which here, let me get to that page with it, is here, for all of us who don't remember these off the top of our head, I know a few of them, Doc and Bashful and Dopey, Grumpy, Sneezy, Sleepy, Happy, did we talk about Bashful? We talked about Bashful, but Doc, he's the head of the dwarfs, in fact, I think he's supposedly the tallest of the dwarfs, there you go. He's about 3 foot tall. So going back to, someone did an analysis of this, looking at Snow White being the average height of a 15 to 17-year-old girl in 1937, and they pinned her at about 5 foot three to 5 foot four, which made Doc, the tallest of the dwarfs, being 36 inches, and then the smallest was one of the other dwarfs who I believe was Dopey at like 32 and a half inches. So these are small men. Small people, little people.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Each of them having a trait. Let's talk about each one. Doc wears glasses, like me.
Okay.
And often mixes up his words.
Okay.
I did that on purpose. But he often mixes up his words.
So it's like you.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yes. So here's a guy who, if he's really Doc, and you go, okay, he's a smart guy, but it's hard for him to speak. He's the leader, and he has some good traits, and they're all nice to Cinderella. Sorry, not Cinderella. We're not there yet. They're
You're all mixing.
Maybe
more.
They're nice to Cinderella, too. Maybe they're trying to get Snow White jealous. Stay tuned. Who knows? But, you know, if he's a really smart dwarf, dude, person, mm-hmm. kind and considerate, you know, well, that, there's a lot of attractive traits there. But he's 36 inches tall. And he's probably, you know, quite the senior in age to Snow White.
So the mean, small people cannot be love of normal people.
Right, because as Randy Newman says, no, I don't even want to go into that song.
Okay.
Bashful, very shy, but he's sweet. He's cute. He's very cute. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's that old, though. I think Doc was a lot older. I think Bashful is a younger dwarf. He has a small smile. Mm-hmm. He's one. Grumpy, biggest nose of the dwarfs. It's like the Jimmy Durante of dwarfs. He's got the big nose. And he's seen with one eye shut. Now, why would... Because he's grumpy. That's it.
Okay.
Anyway, so sneezy. What is... Well, let's go back to grumpy. Grumpy is somebody who's just like grumpy all the time. You know, grumpy. So, again, nice person, but grumpy. So these are all different traits and characteristics that, you know, I don't want someone who's grumpy. I don't want someone who's bashful. I don't want somebody who, even though
it's
they're smart...
Also by Kobe. Is
they all had to wear masks for okay. these times. So sneezy, he sneezes, he's got hay fever all the time, he's sickly, but and very powerful sneezes. Sleepy. Oh, sorry. Very tired. Appears slothful. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Appears slothful.
They mean they try to put this characteristic in each for reject attraction.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. Or they're trying to point them out, or they're over. Like we're all of us are a combination
okay.
of these traits.
Yeah.
To an extreme, one way or the other. So we, like Doc, who wears glasses, we may have some things we're smart in. We may have difficulty in speaking at times, but it may just be a tiny bit of who we are. Bashful, we can be a little bit shy and reserved, but we're not overly shy and reserved. So here, these are all like extremes mm-hmm. of personalities. They're, I believe part of that is just to have a comic relief in this whole scenario. Let's get back to this though. Happy, joyous. He's happy all the time. Don't you want someone happy all the time? Or if they're too happy and happy too often,
that's just weird.
It's weird. So, and then Dopey. This is interesting. He's the only dwarf that doesn't have a beard.
Wow.
Why? Is he too young? Oh, he's clumsy and mute. So he doesn't speak.
Okay.
So this is Dopey. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So... in this whole scenario, she's there with these seven dwarfs, seven guys, who actually treat her nicely. She takes care of them. She cooks. She cleans. They go off to work. I think that was a song, Hi-Ho or something like that. They go to work. They come back. It's just, you know, it's a routine. And she gets along with these, but there's no... attraction. In fact, these guys are so comical, you wouldn't even think that anyone would be attracted to mm-hmm. them. In fact, they don't want the moviegoer or the person reading the book and cartoon. They don't want them to see them as viable alternatives for Snow White. But what they want to have happen is for you to be really upset when the queen, the evil queen, the wicked stepmother comes by. And if you remember the story, she gives Snow White
an apple.
Not an IBM, but an apple. No, she gives her an apple, and she tells her all your dreams will come true if you eat this apple. And she takes a bite, and she gets knocked out, falls asleep. And the dwarves are so upset when they come home and they find her what appears to be dead. And they put her in a glass coffin, and they leave her on display.
Because nobody cook and clean the home.
Yeah, now they're upset. Not because she's in the coffin, but who cooks, who cleans?
Oh, my.
Good point. My. I wonder if that's the point that they were trying to get across with the story.
Yeah.
Don't mess with the help. What? What? So, but the whole point of this, I believe, is now here comes this prince. And I'm not going to go to the backstory in the prince. I'm just going to talk about he sees her in the coffin. He is so sad. He kisses her.
To who kiss a body?
Yeah, who kisses a dead person. Body, especially one that's been under glass for weeks, if not months.
I miss my dad.
It's terrible. In the yeah. woods, in the forest, in the sun.
With
seven small guys going, come on, go kiss her, kiss her. I would, but I'm too dopey. You know, but
okay.
He comes, he kisses her, it wakes her from her slumber, and they run off happy ever after.
So if you are sleeping and you wake up, and one guy, and you say, hey, marry this guy immediately.
Immediately.
Without know who is the guy.
And what was her breath like also? Like, Micah. But what does this guy have as a trait? He's a prince. He is good looking. He's got money. And he kisses her.
That's it?
That's it.
Anything else?
Now, all these other guys, Doc and Bashful and Happy.
Working hard.
Working hard, doing stuff all day long. They don't have a chance.
And it's small.
But a good-looking, rich prince who wants to have affection with you, that's the guy you should stay with. Now, that's one story in our lines of stories.
But program people believe this is the way that you can find your soulmate.
You find your soulmate by looking for love in... Ooh, they're attractive. Oh, they're not. They're attractive. Oh, he's dopey. He's bashful. He's sleepy.
He's working hard. No.
Oh, but they work hard. But I don't care about that because they're not good looking. Oh, here's a good looking guy. Oh, and...
They don't have money.
No, don't have money. The other way. In any case, beauty and good looks keeps her alive. Stop her from being killed at the beginning. The prince who's attracted to her looks kisses her. He's in love with her, however. And then she immediately, upon waking up, goes, I'm going to go live with this guy.
Forever.
Forever. But they don't tell you about the rest of the story. We'll talk about some of the other stories when we get back on 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette.
And Jim.
E. Jimmy.
Jimmy.
Jimmy. Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim
here on the air on LA Talk Radio, on your YouTube channel, and or replay somewhere in the metaverse.
Oh, this is what
I never metaverse. I didn't like.
Okay.
Anyway, so we're going to continue on with our childhood stories that have inflicted massive psychological damage on our species, or should I say our generation?
It is generation.
Generation. So, maybe not too much damage. Maybe it's been good for us.
Or maybe it's more than one generation, I guess.
It could be more than one generation. Yeah. So, the other would be, and we were talking about Snow White and how she goes off with this prince and, you know, good-looking, rich prince. If there was one thing that rich folk could do to have programmed a generation of younger, typically girls, want to look for rich guys to marry, this kind of stuff would be like the propaganda you would use. I'm going to give Disney money to make a film of why young girls, as they get older, they should be looking for rich guys. Don't even worry what their background is. Don't worry if they're nice, but if they're rich, that's who you should look for.
Yeah.
So that's another thing here, is that you can look into the Is there some kind of underlying? Did Disney do this because they just wanted to make a story that people would go see? Or is there some evil intent? Or as a result? Both.
Oh, both. Yeah.
Or just as a result of doing these stories that they wanted everyone to relate to,
mm-hmm.
have they created certain traits amongst people, characteristics, that I'm not going to say are good or bad traits, but have impacted how we have and how we look for relationships. Next, we're going to talk about Cinderella.
Mm-hmm.
Lizette said during the break to me, don't go through the whole story because everyone knows the story.
Yes.
I've never heard this story, Cinderella. What's it about?
Quickly, she went to a party, lost the shoes, and some guy found her by the side of the field.
So
that's it.
At the party, she meets the prince at the party. These are the things that bother me. Okay, here is another time. Here's another one, right? So here is
has a stepmother.
Stepmother, but she's got a father and a mother. The mother dies. The father remarries. The stepmother is kind and nice to her. And then the father dies. Dies accidentally. And after that happens, the stepmother reveals her true evil intent. So forcing Cinderella to do the chores, wait a sec, this is kind of like Snow White again, doing the chores, doing the cooking, doing the cleaning.
Clean cooking. So if you clean cookie, you become?
You become. Princess. Well, that's actually interesting, right?
Mm-hmm.
So she does the cooking, does the cleaning, works hard, is mistreated by her evil stepmother again. The stepmother's evil. So.
And also stepsister.
The stepsisters are evil.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll get to the end of the story where the stepsisters, well, they're actually all kind of forgiven. The stepsisters are allowed to live with Cinderella in the castle. So she forgives them because they're too young and they're influenced by the evil stepmother. But the stepmother is banned from ever stepping foot in the castle.
Mm-hmm.
So now think about this. So the young girl sees her father with this stepmother, and let's say now this person, you, have been programmed to see that, well, as soon as you're out of the house and married, you're never ever going to talk to that evil stepmother again. So, but, you know, your stepsisters who might have treated you badly, you're going to grow up and you're going to forgive them because good people, you know, can be coerced by bad people. But Cinderella is kept from doing a lot of things. She ends up at the ball, meets the prince. He falls in love with her. But he falls in love with her. She's one in a beautiful dress. She's got these glass slippers. She's got all these mice that become her, what do they call it, horsemen. They actually drive her in a big, what used to be.
So she looks like rich.
She looks rich. That's right. She looks like a princess.
Mm-hmm.
So
she's not dressing like that, she don't have opportunity.
Which leads us to believe. So you need to, even if you're not rich, in order to trap a rich fella, you need to dress like you're rich, act the part, and get the role.
And catch the guy.
Catch the guy, trap him. Here's another, though. So they dance. One night, they dance. They just love being with each other. And then there's the stress of the
connection.
Well, the stress of the connection is he doesn't know where she goes. Where did she go? Where
she
is she?
She doesn't have cell phone. Can't this.
No cell phone. That's good.
Sorry.
Can't text.
Yeah.
But again, she's being mistreated at the house, kept away. There's a lot of tension developing. And this, again, connects the audience to the situation, waiting for it to be resolved. The resolution is this, you know, the shoe fits, you must marry it. If the shoe fits, you must marry it. I think is the story. I think it was what some of those lawyers got that little poem from. If the shoe fits, you must marry it. So he goes around. This is the prince goes around looking for the woman who lost this shoe. And so, again, this is the most frail relationship you've ever seen. Two people who visually fall in love, have a wonderful evening dancing. That's it. And now he's got to seek her out in the whole kingdom. It makes a great story.
Mm-hmm, of course.
If you're 5, 6, 8, 10 years old. Yeah, it's 1950. But again, it's how to go from having to work hard and clean your room and cook and do work for your evil stepmother. How to get out of that is to put on a really fancy dress and find
and marry a rich guy. So marry this way, guy. You know, stay in the home with cleaning. You living in the new home and cleaning for the husband.
But what's interesting is you need magic. You need this fairy godmother to help provide you with the things that then will help you trap that prince.
Mm-hmm.
These are really messed up stories.
Why? Try to put the people belief and hope.
Hope. So that's actually interesting. Yeah. So are these stories written to hope that mm-hmm. that we back in the 50s and actually back earlier is that there are a lot more people who would see a life of hard work. And today we have a lot less hard work. There's hard work. It's hard, but it's less. There's less of it. There's less physically demanding work than there was back then. So maybe this was appealing to the masses as a way of seeing, okay, I'm working hard today, but my tomorrow may come where I can get out of this. Now, nowhere in either of these stories so far do I see any hope for young boys.
Mm-hmm.
The only hope you have is to become a prince in order for a young girl who grows up to want to be with you.
Exactly.
But these princes, you don't really see a really deep personality developed.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see be kind, considerate, become educated, work hard, take care of your family. It's
dressing beauty.
Dressing.
And go to the party.
That's go to the party message. Also and try to meet up with this princess.
That's it. This is the way. Easy.
But you need some money to do that. I'm not complicating it.
Right. So what happened? They marry again. We don't know what happened.
They marry. We don't know if they have children. If they don't,
the divorce, and she become the stepmother of the other kids. Okay.
Actually, that's kind of interesting. The one Snow White was from 1937. This is from 1950. Maybe she's
the daughter of
Could be.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. And then Beauty and the Beast. This is an adaptation. So the notes I have on this one are not necessarily from the original, but they will suffice for our analysis of Beauty and the Beast.
Oh, backwards. Who knows? We still make it.
Are we going to do that again tonight?
Okay. So what happened with this history?
Beauty and the Beast. Here's another one here. Actually, this one doesn't start with the evil stepmother, but this starts with a guy by the name of Maurice. He's got a daughter, a stepdaughter.
But he is rich too.
No, this is you're talking about then.
The Beast?
You're talking about the prince.
But the Beast.
The Beast. Well, the Beast was a prince who was mm-hmm. arrogant.
Oh.
Good-looking, arrogant prince.
Okay.
And this old woman comes up to his castle one day.
Hello?
And he answers and goes, "Get away, old lady." And the old lady's like, "But can I talk to you? Can I come in?" And he's like, "No, get away, old lady." And then she takes off like this wig and clothing, and she's this actually beautiful young woman who's like an enchantress or magical or something. And she says to him, "You treated me badly. Because you treated me badly, I'm going to condemn you to a life of being a horrid-looking creature that matches your personality." And she turns him into the Beast and then gives him an ultimatum that unless you can find true love by the time these petals fall off this flower, you will be stuck as the Beast forever.
Mm-hmm.
So now, it's an interplay of a guy. This is actually a change for a guy. So this one's more written around a guy. This is actually kind of interesting.
This is more new, 1991.
Well, this adaptation of it. Okay. But let's say the story was written whenever it was written.
Okay.
That it's if you say what is more, there are two things going on here. There is a character who's arrogant who learns to lose his arrogance and really tries to support and help this young girl as well as her uncle or whoever the guy is who is her older caretaker, guardian, that he sacrifices himself to help them, losing his arrogance through this process. And as far as that's concerned, I think that's a really good lesson. That this, as far as lessons go, is probably one of the better lessons.
Okay.
And it also takes, there's a lot of self-sacrifice that goes on in Beauty and the Beast. You know what? After today, in my analysis, in our analysis, I'm starting to like Beauty and the Beast as an actual children's story that is beneficial to both young men and young women who are trying to develop into concerned, caring adults.
Okay.
That for guys, don't be arrogant, because if you're arrogant, you'll be a beast. And even if you're a beast, maybe you're not that good-looking prince, but even if you are, you know, bald, or if you are kind and generous and you have a loving heart and you're supportive, that you can find a princess who can see your good quality and traits.
Okay. So what happened with her? So she's a prince, or she's what?
She might have been a princess at one point in time, but she's her guardian is this guy who's like an inventor. He's a little weird. They think he's crazy. He gets cast out. He gets attacked. And when this all happens, he is in the woods. He goes to knock on he goes into the castle of the beast. And he goes wandering around the castle, and the beast catches him in the castle and is irate, and he locks him into the castle. And in doing this, I can't go into the details because I don't know them, but I can go into what happens is that somehow the young girl who is the person who is under the guardianship of the guy who's now trapped in the castle, convinces the beast to let her take the place of the guy, and that she'll stay in there forever. Just to release, you know, please release my uncle or my guardian. And he's like, no, no, no. When I say he, the guardian's like, no, no, no. But the beast accepts this. And I think she does this before knowing what the beast looks like. And
she saw the castle. So maybe it's a good place to live.
To be trapped. trapped in a castle.
Yeah.
With a whole bunch of animated candlesticks and stuff.
Can be big party. Yeah.
Spoons, whatever they are. She gets then stuck in the castle, but because of her sacrifice and other things that the beast sees, instead of putting her in the dungeon, he allows her to have free reign of the castle, gives her a room, and just says, whatever you do, don't go into this one area of the castle. So it's like one of those.
Of course. I have to go there.
But I have to go there. There's a whole bunch of stuff that happens. But what the biggest impact of the story is, he basically gives, the beast gives his life, puts his own life on the line to save the uncle, as well as to protect her. Because she's being forced to marry some guy by the name of Gaston, who is I guess, like a hunter type guy, whatever his role is, who knows. But he's a dude who's like, you're going to marry me and I'm going to marry you and you love me and we're going to do it tomorrow and I'm forcing you to do this. And she's like, no. So the beast does sacrifice himself for her to protect her. And it's in this self-sacrifice that he gets stabbed by Gaston or by this guy who's trying mm-hmm. to marry her. Mm-hmm. And the guy who does the stabbing falls and it looks like he's died somewhere. So he's protected her. But in doing so, the beast is stabbed and it is a mortal wound and he's going to die. And in this, in her and her relationship with the beast at this point in time, she witnesses this self-sacrifice. She is changed internally where she now loves the beast. She kisses the beast as he's dying and says, I love you, or something to that effect.
Again, kissing
at the right, kissing, people. Well, dead, dying person.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a common theme. Mm-hmm. And the kiss happens before the final petal falls from the flower that was given by the enchantress, the woman who cursed mm-hmm. the prince to begin with. And the stab wound heals. He becomes the prince once more. And at the end of this show, they dance off into the sunset.
But she loved the ugly guy or the hostile guy?
She loved the qualities of the beast.
Okay.
So I think you were telling me that there's another version of the story where he stays the beast. Is that what you're saying?
No, I say he's a aggressive guy because he's a beast, you know? But she loved a guy aggressive. So maybe some kind of... They feel protection, never mind the people is aggressive, create some kind of relationship.
Okay.
You know? And you believe no, because with my love, maybe he become more calm person.
So is this actually training? And we're just asking the question, is this training for an abusive relationship? Oh, he's tough, he's arrogant, and he's going to protect me, so I'm mm-hmm. going to be attracted. And maybe part of you're thinking, but he'll change and become soft with me.
Yeah.
Even though he's harsh with other people, he'll mm-hmm. protect me.
And that's a lot of belief. Of
that's a tough relief.
Mm-hmm.
So with that, we're going to take a break and we're going to be back right after this message. Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette.
And Jim.
On LA Talk Radio, YouTube, or somewhere in the universe. Mm-hmm. So today we were talking about childhood stories, and they're actually, you know, we've seen them, and we probably have watched them with our children as well, that may have impacted and affected our generation and generations before and after us. And we're flipping through paper series because we're going to get to our summary now. So all these stories are things that we've seen that may have good or bad
messages,
mm-hmm. but nonetheless, they're messages. And I think originally, just before we went to break, I was talking about how I thought that Beauty and the Beast had some really good message for guys, that you had to look at self-sacrifice, not being arrogant, and supporting your potential future family. Instead of in really protecting them. And we thought that was good. Here are the things that I think we've learned.
Mm-hmm.
We've learned that, one, that a lot of these stories are showing superficial relationships based upon looks and money.
Yeah, that's never show any kind of the good communication or any stuff. It's just lose good and have money, and this is the perfect person for you.
And as we start off this show with, is that the characters that are put into these, is that the main character is always, like for some of these, one of the main characters is Snow White, Cinderella, they are an average 13 to 17, 15 to 17 year old. They're fashioned after the average 15 to 17 year old girl at the time they were written, to make people, the average person, feel similar or connected to that person. So if you look, and I'd say this is true with lots of movies, is that the main characters are always the most average people.
Yeah.
Now, average is also attractive. That when people are average looking, meaning average height, average eye distance, average nose size and stuff, that is something that psychologically has been shown to be attractive to the most amount of people, because there are people who are most like them. So when you go to a Disney movie or a movie and there is a 15 to 17 year old cartoon person that kind of looks average but is good looking, you can relate to them. And now you are programmed to feel the emotions that they're feeling. And the other characters, we talked about Dopey and Sneezy and Doc, they become cartoonish in their looks, in their behaviors, to put us away from them and more aligned with the leading roles and the leading characters. And this is true of all movies, but especially of these that we're talking about. Snow White, Cinderella, having tough childhood. The second part of that is not only having the tough childhood because their mother is no longer in the picture, but they've got an evil stepmother.
Yeah.
We talked about that, is that the stepmother's portrayed as evil, and that is a program that has been put into children of many generations.
Yeah. What is the third?
The third thing is, we talked about Beauty and the Beast and the positive part of taking arrogance, and arrogance will get you nowhere. You'll become a beast, and the only way to get rid of being a beast is to self-sacrifice, support the woman, the young lady, their family, almost give up your life to support them. That I saw was a positive message.
Yeah.
The negative message in there was forcing a young lady to be in this castle, and seeing that here is somebody who's aggressive, who was arrogant, who's a beast, but if I love them, they will change into a caring prince. And if they are arrogant, if they are aggressive at the beginning of a relationship, they may not act that way.
It's forever.
Right. Most people do not change their personality traits. They are long, stable traits. They can, however, on the first few dates, the first few times that you're together, be polite and nice, and then they slowly go into their aggressiveness.
The real person.
So we are actually really concerned with showing this, as that it's possible to change somebody who is awful into a nice prince. And the only reason this prince changed from being arrogant into the, quote, kind, giving, self-sacrificing beast, and then changed back into a prince, was because they had nowhere else to go. They were forced into doing that. And I actually don't like the fact that the person changed back, the beast changed back into the prince at the end of Beauty and the Beast, because it was only when he was the beast that he began to act not like the beast.
Mm-hmm.
And becoming the good-looking prince again.
Maybe the arrogance dropped.
Maybe his personality of beast would come back. So when he's a beast, personality of being a nice prince comes out. When he is a prince, the personality of being a beast comes out. The programming that we receive from all this, I mean, these are just stories, we understand that, but as a 4-year-old, a 5-year-old, an 8-year-old, These are real stories. These are programs that go into your brain as the synapses are connected. The thought patterns become permanent. And this is how we then go about dealing with other people in our relationships.
Yeah. And it's a program. And also it's a child program. So it's more strong. You know, that you are a child. You believe something. And I guess also the other part is the concept for relationship maybe is not clear.
That you don't need communication. You need to just dress nicely, find somebody who's attractive. Hopefully they have money. And the way to find somebody with money is look like you have money. Fake it till you make it. And what was the other thing we learned? If the shoe fits, you must marry it.
There you go.
That's it.
This is the message for today.
Anyway, thank you for listening to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette.
And Jim.
On LA Talk Radio. See you next week.
Bye.
You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lizette Guevara. Only on LA Talk Radio.